Welcome to Tippy Tappy Sports. It's the end of the World Cup, but the Brothers Timms are still here. And
with bad reception.
To take us to, you know, to tell us about his Thanksgiving plans. We've got Aaron Timms joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Still here. Yeah. Still here 5 days later, still celebrating. I'll be giving thanks to Travis Head.
Limoncello Pappy,
showing up. Michael Clark, showing up all the negativity and all the predictions of how bad Australia was and how they weren't going to win the World Cup. Guess what? They did.
What is Michael Clark's problem? Seriously, it's like he's still now that he's sort of moved into middle age, he just sort of likes picking fights, whether it's with Karl Stefanovic or whoever. Yeah. But he's just sort of the angry, pissed bloke professionally now.
Yeah.
It's like the old angry Anglo.
Yeah, like what kind of a career does he have? Like I guess he sort of commentates a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. But I think he does. I think he does some crap like radio show with like Laurie Daly and some other drongo. So he's moved into
just the boys.
Yeah. It's all that kind of crap.
Laurie Daly, see another secret Greek, I suppose.
Indigenous Greek.
Well, he looks Mediterranean, doesn't he? He's had a very, very strange career. Well, all of his career was weird, wasn't it? Because people seem to hate him. And I guess, now that he's retired and sort of makes these types of interventions, you can sort of see why. But then he was a good captain. That's the thing people forget. He was a good captain.
And he was a very good player.
He was a great player. I mean, when he became captain, he sort of became better as a batsman. Yeah. I mean, he scored a ridiculous, went on this ridiculous run. And he also like retired quite early, sort of 30, 34 or something, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. It's like he'd had enough. Like the skin cancers were getting to him and he just
That's right. He had some moles cut out, didn't he?
He got sick of creaming up, having to get creamed before going out.
Yeah, just embrace it. Just go out, just cook your forehead and sort of cracked up skin and pick some fights with Carlos and away you go.
Yeah, and late career on Current Affair. How did you celebrate the final? The victory. Did you sort of drive around Queens, hooting and hollering?
Yeah, Australian flag, boxing kangaroo. out the zip car window, and just get the little sort of hybrid rental car and
drive some cones in the back seat.
Yeah, well, I mean, every time you get one of those cars, they stink of marijuana,
right?
And usually have sort of some disturbing stains on the back seat, so you can draw your own conclusion about what people have been using those cars for. Maybe celebrating Australian cricket victories, so it could be high on the list there. And cricket fever gripped the predominantly Polish, Nepalese, and Coptic Egyptian neighborhood of Ridgewood, and you could see people were just up. They were cock-a-hoop. With the joy of an unexpected victory for Australia in the World Cup final. The script had been written, Gerard Whateley style. They'd written the script.
They said they couldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
the day
of the World Cup and the day after the World Cup final, that those are sort of Whateley's days. They're his
There is Christmas.
There is Christmas. There they are. Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But no, I just sort of watched it and I think I messaged you and that was about it. But you went out. You went up to the pub.
Straight
in
to
the
the
morning.
pub.
Straight to the pub.
Yeah,
Straight to the Carlisle Castle.
Yeah, I mean it's open at that time of the morning. You know, you got the shift workers who are just kind of coming in their hi-vis, having a scooter or two. It was good too. There were some colourful characters. It was good to see. What do you think of like when the players sort of celebrate the victory? Like Travis Head seemed to have like his kit on for like a good 72 hours, like after the game.
You got to keep the kit on, because
Yeah.
how would anyone know that you're an Australian cricketer if you don't have the kit on? They also didn't. It didn't seem. I was keeping sort of a rolling watch on the different Instagram accounts and so on and so forth. It didn't seem like they celebrated as much as for the T20 World Cup final. Yeah, that one they had the shots of them in the dressing room, sort of jumping up and down and doing the dancing and Mitch Stark and all that kind of stuff. For this one, it seemed somehow a bit more subdued. Like a lot of the photos were just of them sitting, like Travis said, sitting by himself with the trophy, in an empty room kind of thing.
Wearing his speed dealer sunnies.
Yeah, with the speed dealers and doing the little pistols, giving it the pistols. But full credit to them. Full credit to them. I mean, he stayed on for the T20 for some reason. I don't know.
I mean, what a ridiculous bit of scheduling to have.
Yeah.
I mean, even the fact that they played India in the final. I mean, to have gone and played a World Cup, and I mean, they would have obviously anticipated they'd make a semi, so they'd be there for a while. It's not as though they were going to come home immediately or anything like that. You know, unlike the Wallabies or something like that. But to then schedule like a T20 series against India just seems like it's like the sort of like the there's this kind of pathetic attempt at recreating or Christmas or recreating a major event, and no one is interested in going and watching Australia and India now play a couple of T20 games. Well,
Well, probably the Indians are.
maybe they
The
are.
Indian fans, they seem to like cricket quite a bit.
Well, I don't know if you saw I was reading I was reading the India News, this website weon.com, actually, you know, sent to me by our man in Delhi, Ashish Gupta.
Yes.
It was a 23-year-old fan who was so distraught after the defeat that he committed suicide.
Yeah, that's quite a sort of somber note
Uplifting.
to introduce quite early into the episode, Timothy. But what did you do about that? That's a lot.
Well, I read the article and thought that wasn't too good. Maybe there were a few
Well, I
other
was
things
like
going on.
surprised actually that there wasn't. I haven't seen any reports of kind of sort of civil unrest or violence. It's kind of like, when the bloody Montreal put-ins or whatever they're called lose in the NHL
Ice hockey.
Canuck Cup or
Yeah.
whatever. They go on a rampage through,
The streets.
through Mont-Royal or
Just eating poutine.
Yeah, exactly. Or when the Philadelphia Eagles win the Super Bowl, they get a little bit excited, don't they? But I mean, the Indian crowd seem to sort of disperse and, you know, be a little bit miffed and then just get on with their lives, which, well, what a great advertisement for the sport it is, isn't it? I mean, the silences were kind of devastating. I did feel a bit sorry for India that they'd set up this tournament, the home World Cup, the huge stadium named after the Prime Minister, the, you know, nationalists, you know, the Hindu nationalism, cricket, industrial complex being sort of aligned.
Yeah.
You know, Kohli, Rohit, Bumrah, Shami with the new hair and everything. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Shami went and got a whole head of hair for this tournament. And then they lose in the final. And it's kind of like, well, what does this mean? I suppose the big question is, what does this mean for the one day cricket World Cup? You know, is it a tournament that people look at now and say, well, it delivered this incredible final with this sort of unexpected result, which really was a testament to Pat Cummins' captaincy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
You know, he captained very sort of imaginatively and briskly and energetically, and you know, he really showed up his counterpart. And I don't think that kind of skill as a captain can be demonstrated as easily in T20 cricket. Like, a lot does depend on the toss, on the conditions. You can't really pull as many moves. You can't make as many moves as a captain in T20 cricket as you can in one day cricket. And selection seems to matter a lot less as well. You're basically just kind of relying on a couple of your batters to, you know, land some big blows. And if they don't, it's kind of a small window to make it happen. If it doesn't happen, then that's kind of game over sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas one day cricket, I mean, sort of all of those, it did have the, no, I'm sort of just repeating things that other people have said, but we are 5 days on from the final because I think you were hungover, so we couldn't record this podcast earlier. But, you know, it did have the quality and colour and character and texture of a test match, you know, with the sort of the scoring and the tension and the way that the innings were paced.
Yeah.
You know, Travis Head sort of starting quite sort of watchfully, almost a little scratchily. And then sort of just after he got to about 50 or something, he just kind of started pulling the trigger. And Marnus sort of kept playing that basically a test match innings.
Yeah.
At the other end. You know, like I sort of thought, I came away from that thinking, you know, it's obviously colored by the fact that Australia won. If they'd lost, I'd be like, you know, throw the one day World Cup in the bin. But now that they've won, I'm like, well, we've got to keep it going. We've got to keep it going. It's important. It's a great advertisement for the sport. And it's more interesting to watch than the T20 World Cup, I think. But
it is more interesting to watch. And I suppose just on that point, about, you know, what you were saying at the beginning of that very long rant, about, you know, India having sort of set all of this up and you know, Cummins having captained sort of very well. I mean, when you compare it to the other World Cup victories, and you know how Australia traditionally struggles to have any success in India, I think this absolutely has to be ranked as not only the best, you know, one day World Cup or final win, but I mean it's certainly the equivalent of winning a Test series in India, because you know, to have entirely sure what the final attendance was. I mean, everyone keeps saying it was 130,000, but I think
it was 92,000, and no, the official attendance was like 92,000, even though it's supposedly 130,000 capacity stadium. And your friend Colo actually did a lot of tweets about this. He made it like it's a big Colo talking point to underscore that the MCG held more people for the 2015 final than the Modi Stadium did for this one. And
wow,
a lot of Indians are very upset about his tweets on this subject. But for once, this is where I think Colo and Tippy Tappy Sports are aligned.
Yeah.
Not in glorifying Melbourne. Who cares about that? It's not about the MCG's best stadium in the world. Who cares about that?
Cathedral.
It's the Sagrada Familia of sport. It's the
greatest sporting city in the world.
It is a rare feat, an exceptional achievement, and it has been in some respects. You know, this is a miraculous year for Pat Cummins as a cricketer, as a leader, as a you know, as the soon to be Bollywood star. I mean, he's achieved so much this year. I mean, it only could have been capped off by winning the Ashes series rather than, you know, almost contriving to lose them.
I was going to say, there's been a lot of this tough chat around, hasn't there? It's like, an amazing year for Australian cricket, best with this team now ranks with the sort of team of the 2000s. I'm like, I'm not sure that's completely accurate. I mean, we've lost two series at home against India. We were shown up by the B team in the last in the last series.
Yeah.
Like Washington Sundar, you know, like, come on.
Who?
Can't even remember, you know, what he looks like.
He looks like Mohammed Shami. It's
been a good year. Yes, of course. Like, okay, winning the World Test Championship final is a good achievement. You know, the Ashes, I think we've sort of, there's a bit of revisionism going on with the way that people are talking about the Ashes. I mean, okay, we scraped through with a couple of victories in the first two tests, and then we got thoroughly outplayed over the course of the remainder of the series. I mean, it could easily been 3-2. And then we would have been having a different conversation. I think actually Pat Cummins was at his worst as a captain during the Ashes. He seemed, you know, sort of, I don't know, he seemed a little bit overwhelmed. He didn't have the, but in this final, over the course of this World Cup and the way that, you know, the team built up momentum over the course of the tournament after losing the first two matches, he showed himself to be a very, very adept captain.
Astute.
Maybe it's something about one day cricket where he's able to kind of take more risks, and there seems to be less sort of potential downside than there is in test cricket, where you're sort of playing over 5 days. And so if you get things wrong, it can kind of blow out and sort of get blown out of proportion in a way that maybe it isn't in one day cricket. I don't know. There's something about his captaincy was different. It may be, of course, that he's grown and developed and matured as a captain and is now better now than he was during the Ashes, and better because of that experience. That's another sort of explanation that seems entirely plausible. But, you know, I just don't know that, I don't know, I don't know that this team sort of is quite at that level yet. I mean, you know, they've definitely sort of made the most of their strengths. Like the bowling in the end kind of came good, and, you know, relying on the three very good pace bowlers was shown to be the right strategy ultimately. So we were all kind of wrong to question it. You were wrong to be calling constantly for the for the axing of Mitchell Starc and for Sean Abbott to take his place. That was wrong. And I think, you know, you owe the Australian cricket team an apology. Where's the apology? Limoncello Puppy, probably about to post quotes from the Tippy Tappy Sports podcast.
He's ready.
On his Instagram story.
Yeah.
And I think it's time that we own up to the fact that we got a few things wrong on this podcast. And, you know, that's the sign of an elite cricket podcast, isn't it? That you kind of put your hand up and say, yeah, we got that one wrong, but next time we'll also get it wrong, and then we'll keep getting it wrong. And that's fine.
That's right. That's right. You know, that's what it comes down to, is self-development through repeated error is to be encouraged. It's great.
Yes. What about, so you think this is the best, you think this is on par with the test series victory in 2004 in India, or, you know, the achievements of, you know, the greatest achievements of Australian cricket over the past, you know, whatever, ever?
I think it's, well, I think it's certainly equivalent to a test victory or a test series win in India. I mean, just notwithstanding that, you know, it was ultimately only one game. I mean, in the context of a 6-week tournament and all of the hype, which would have been hard for all of the players to ignore, and this sort of relentless noise about, you know, this is India's time, this is all India, India's here to win, you know, we are India, India is cricket, and so on and so forth, to then have to go out and have, I mean, yes, you get a lot of people who attend test matches in India, and they are very rabid in their support of the Indian team. But yeah, from what I could tell on the TV, like it's nothing like that kind of frenetic atmosphere where, I mean, frankly, if the Indian supporters had been able to, they would have sort of streamed onto the field and sort of congratulated any of the Indian bowlers, you know, when they took a wicket or when they hit six or something like that, right? I mean, they really did look like caged animals ready to kind of bust out. So so I think, you know, and it was certainly remarkable when how silent the crowd, you know, got when there was any level of Australian success. So I guess, you know, in that kind of crucible and that sort of concentrated, feverish atmosphere to kind of come out and to keep a cool head in the way that Cummins did and to shuffle his bowlers around and to do all of that kind of good stuff, which I mean ultimately should be second nature to him because he is the Australian captain. That is his job. I mean he's had a lot of time to sort of think about, you know, how he might win the game. I think is still you know, but still to be able to execute on the particular plan, I think, you know, is a significant achievement.
Do you think he runs through the different scenarios like?
Yeah, no doubt.
Nada, he's just like, oh, okay, so three overs from Hazelwood, bring on Maxwell. He's like just at home being like, yeah.
He's just running it through the algo. Yeah,
yeah. Of course, he was good. The one thing about him is he always just seems very relaxed.
Yeah,
he's unflappable. In a way that he's unflappable. He kind of just, I don't know, I think it's something that probably comes from, you know, being 6 foot, whatever, 6 foot three, 6 foot four, and conventionally good looking. I think he just has this sort of comp. He just said being from Penrith, you know, when you're from Penrith and you got that kind of height and that sort of hair and those looks.
You know, life is pretty easy.
Yeah, you're just kind of pretty breezy about everything, I think. Yeah,
exactly.
Kind of circulate through life, imagining that everything is going to go your way. And that's basically the way that things have gone for him. I mean, he's definitely, you know, he's definitely better looking than Steve Smith. So much better as a captain, I think, better than Tim Payne.
Better than Michael Clarke.
I mean, Michael Clarke, I think, would take exception to that characterization because I think Michael Clarke thinks he's really hot. But, you know, Ricky Ponting, obviously,
he's a bit rat-like.
Yeah, he's sort of the Eurasian rat.
Let's just call him El Chino.
Álvaro Recoba batting at number three. So he's good. He's good. He's coming. What about Travis Head? I mean, we talk about sort of previous World Cups, like
he was 1996.
No, 1996, like 2003. Obviously, we won in India in 2003. But for whatever reason, it wasn't spoken about as this kind of monumental achievement, probably because India was not in this position of kind of hegemony that it is now when it comes to the sport. You know, the BCCI didn't kind of control things the way it does now. But I mean, this innings to me felt like, you know, better than, I mean, honestly, I can't even really remember his innings in the World Test Championship final, but, you know, I'm sure he scored quickly or whatever, you know, very aggressive and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you of course famously tweeted in 1998 that you'd seen a four-year-old Travis Head playing in the Nets and thought that he could he could play for Australia one day. There's been a lot of that, hasn't there? It'd be like, you know, bring out the old tweet from Shane Warne, bring out the tweet from Robelinda saying that, you know, that they'd seen Travis Head. But by, you know, the timestamps on these tweets were all like sort of 2013, 2016. It's not as if he was already kind of in Australian under 21 sides and things like that.
Yeah, he'd been identified.
He'd been picked, you know. Everyone sort of knew. Anyone who pays attention to cricket knew in 2013. We were all talking about it, of course. Travis Head, he's coming up. He's the future.
Heads up.
But, you know, do you think this is a better innings than the previous centuries that Australians have scored in World Cup finals? And where do you rank this innings more generally?
Well, obviously the two centuries that have been scored in World Cup finals by Australians were batting first. So less pressure in that respect. And while, you know, certainly pressure as a result of it being a World Cup final, a less feverish atmosphere.
Yeah, playing against Sri Lanka in the West Indies, I don't think is quite as hard as chasing against India in India.
Yeah, yeah. So, and particularly, you know, given the circumstances of the game at that particular time, where we were three for 43
or something.
You know, and it certainly felt as though the Indians could smell blood. And I mean, I have to say, like, two of the most irritating commentators during the entire tournament, Nasser Hussain and Matthew Hayden. Like, they're both in their own way. They're so obnoxious. I mean, Matthew Hayden doesn't really have a command of English that allows him to sort of string together sentences that could be sort of, you know, vaguely syntactically correct. And Nasser Hussain,
but he thinks he's a wordsmith.
Oh God!
He thinks he's got it. Just because you did a couple of barbecue cookbooks doesn't mean you actually know how to write or talk.
Oh, it's
get back on the grill and shut up.
And Nasser Hussain has this. I'm not sure if it's because he's English. I mean, him and Michael Vaughan are certainly the most obnoxious English commentators. I mean, Michael Atherton is perfectly fine.
Athers, the Benno of his generation.
Oh, he's just so languid. But I think it was Nasser Hussain who was commentating around about the time of the third wicket to fall, and he's like, "Oh, this is India's moment. They smell blood in the water. You know, the momentum has shifted. It's all falling in a heap for Australia. Blah blah blah." It's like, oh God, righto, mate, calm down. Like, look, I know. Ultimately, you probably got it wrong by picking England over India, but you know, just shut up. Shut up, mate. Yeah,
you're much better off taking the Stuart Broad approach of writing a column for the Daily Mail about how it's going to be great to see India win. And then when Australia do in fact win, just posting a decanted bottle of a Barossa Red and saying, "Congratulations, Australia," on your Instagram story. You know, that to me is what class looks like.
Yeah, that's magnanimity right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just drink the big juicy red. 14%.
The powerful Shiraz, the GSM.
Just coats the mouth.
Just get the sulfites right in there. That's
it. He's annoying. Look, they're all basically annoying. Watto, of course, came out of this tournament with his reputation enhanced, I think. He's actually not bad as a commentator, I think, Watto.
Watto. Yeah, he's he's fine. I mean, what's his name? Mark Howardson or whatever. I mean, he's still incredibly annoying.
It's weird that Howie sort of had his career sort of develop and progress. I mean, I know he's like an AFL guy, right? But
I don't know.
Yeah, Howie sucks. But
to come back to your point about where this innings kind of ranks. I mean, as far as one day innings goes, I mean, I think this has to be seen as
seen as the greatest one day innings of all time. Like, I mean, you know, we've
better than Maxwell's.
Better than I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's in a final. It's Maxwell's was great, of course. It was a wonderful exhibition of hitting and cramping. But you know, there was more pressure, this was bigger, it was and just the way he was slapping the ball around, it was like
it is this kind of effortlessness. It's like a sort of a combination of, I mean, I know we've compared him to Alan Border before, but there's like this little bit of Justin Langer in him, but
a little bit Gilchrist as well, I think, you know.
Yeah. And it's just this very sort of just pure hitting of the ball, just going like, and when he hits, when he sort of swept, I think it was, who was the other spinner again? Not Jadeja, the other bloke, his name I forgot.
Kuldeep
Yadav. Like when he sort of swept him for six, like the ball goes back to like 30 rows into the stadium. It just kind of just goes on forever. So that kind of pure hitting, in those circumstances, was exceptional. So
yeah, I mean,
Travis Head can do pistols for the rest of his life, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, he's probably going to be captain, right, at some point. So
He's 29 though, right?
He's 29. Yeah, he's 29, but I think he'll be captain kind of in 2 or 3 years. That feels like the natural succession to me. Cummins into Head.
No Limoncello Pappy.
Yeah, I don't think Limoncello Pappy is going to be. We might get a run in the test side. Who knows? But I mean, now we've got what's his face, the bloke with the glasses. Xavier Doherty.
Daniel
Matoy. Jason Crazier.
Todd Carney. Todd Carney. Cummins doesn't like bowling him though.
Yeah. No, that's true. He didn't have confidence in him, did he? But no. That will come with time. Now a question I'm gonna steal off a group chat. Is Travis Head Australia's greatest ever sportsman with a lisp? Yeah, exactly. Can't think of any others.
Who are the other Australian sportsmen, sports people with lisps?
Terry Hill.
Terry Hill just sort of had that spitty mouth where he couldn't. I mean, he couldn't.
Nah, but he's talking like this. He's going kind of like, yeah.
like Ken Callender.
Kenny Callender. What? what a legend of sports broadcasting. Him and Kenny Callender and Reese back on. Darryl Eastlake, all the greats, all the greats.
Terry Hill.
I can't think of any others.
No, I can't think of any others. I mean, I think that's probably because
Lockyer had a problem with his mouth, obviously, or his throat. His neck. Just throat him as well. That's basically a lisp, isn't it?
anyone has a slight speech impediment. Well, then you'd add Tommy Raudonikis to that. as the original Tommy Raudonikis, not.
he's definitely up there though, isn't he?
He does tick a lot of boxes. I think the reason maybe why you don't see people with speech impediments reach the upper echelons of sport is because ultimately you'd be teased mercilessly in a team unless you were incredibly good. So you sort of have to be very good, and obviously Travis Head is very good, and that's maybe like Cummins and Stark and whatnot do laugh about the lisp behind his back.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't surprise me. Something that we can investigate in the 4 years that we have until the next Tippy Tappy Cricket World Cup podcast. No, actually, There's going to be one next year because we've got the T20 happening.
Got the T20 happening.
Here in the United States of America. You know, games being played right here in New York City. Actually, not in New York, but about 30 kilometers outside of the five boroughs in some crap stadium that they've built out in Long Island. Because Eric Adams had this plan that was to put a temporary stadium over the cricket pitches that they use in Van Cortlandt Park in the Bronx.
Right.
And the amateur cricketers shot it down. They were like, well, where are we going to play? So now we're going to trek out to sort of Garden City, Long Island, or Farmingdale, or someplace like that.
Right.
To go and watch the cricket, which you know, should be fun.
Yeah,
looking forward to it.
That'll be fine. You'll be coming
out for the World Cup next year, mate. Will you?
Yeah, we'll do some tippy tappy specials from live from New York City.
Right, live from 4 Charles Prime Rib.
Live from Keynes.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds excellent. So I think the way that you'd probably sort of sum up this tournament is that you know, Australia, in a way that's not dissimilar to the All Blacks, they are a tournament team.
Well, I was going to say probably South Africa now, right? Australia are the ultimate tournament team. I mean, the question is India going to, if the one day World Cup, you know, survives,
and let's assume that it does. Another
one, yeah, I think we'll probably have another one, but it's tough to see it going much more than beyond one more, just because the format doesn't really exist anywhere else. But I could definitely see India sort of asking that there be a final series instead of just a one-off final. Because if it had been like a best of three or something, India probably would have won. But
what a bunch of sore losers. What do you think it'd be like? Oh no, hang on.
Of course. You could change the rules. But I mean, it does feel like this is the defining rivalry of world cricket now. And Australia's in quite a good position because, you know, you're going up against this juggernaut and you have this kind of, you know, free hit every time you're playing them, where all the resources, all the cultural heft, all the kind of interest in the sport is with India, all the momentum is with India, and Australia can sort of just come along and burglarize naturally.
Yeah.
With that sort of breezy 6-4 Penrith insouciance. this seems like sort of a kind of defining victory, a template for Australia to use in its dealings with India in the years to come. I mean, and I do really think it's about Australia and India. Like, you know, okay, England's there as well, but ultimately, Australia is the foil that India needs to kind of have a coherent cricketing culture, I think.
Yeah, because I mean, Australia will always be strong at cricket in a way that England won't always be strong, I don't think. And, you know, it's by maintaining that strength. Now it's just sort of turning into like a Jared Waitley kind of thing. It's like, you know.
good concluding thoughts. Less than a minute to go on the thing.
Anyway, look, we can discuss your Thanksgiving on the next occasion, and that'll be next week. Like, there's no need to leave it so long between
weekly occurrence now.
Yeah. Let's get into it. All right, go and have
look
some.
Look forward to that.
Go and brine your turkey.
Okay, you brine yours. Yeah. See you.
Okay. Bye.